Nelson. Hey everyone, welcome back to An Emo Girl's Guide to the Galaxy. We're here for season three, kicking it off with Kaylee Smith. We're having interviews, so if you love sarcasm, hate the patriarchy, and love talking with authors, you've come to the right place.
Yay! We're so happy to have you back!
Oh, sorry.
No, you're good.
Already cutting you off.
As you can see, Kaylee,
we're so excited
with us now.
No, you're good. I was just gonna say, we're so happy to have you back. You were here for book one, A Ruinous Fate, and now it's time for book two. We're so happy to talk about it. So if you wanna like give a blurb about book one and two, the spoiler-free version, we're ready for it. And an author intro, tell us all about it.
Yes, okay, so hello everyone. I am Kaylee Smith. I write YA and adult romantasy books, usually with some sort of like witchy or gothic element in them. And I'm literally so excited to be back here. I like the first podcast we did was probably one of the most fun things I did. When we were doing the press for A Ruinous Fate, but basically, for those who may not be caught up to speed, A Ruinous Fate is a book about a girl named Calla, a witch, whose fate is controlled by magical dice called Witch's Dice. And so in order to undo her disastrous destiny, she has to go into this magical demonic forest called the Neverending Forest with her ex-boyfriend and her ex-boyfriend's very hot older brother.
Yes.
And all their friends.
Exactly. Chaos just exudes. Like, it's basically, like, the most chaotic college group you know, but with magic.
Yeah.
And, yep. And then book two, A Reckless Oath, which comes out, or is out, if you're already listening to this. It's basically, how do I put this without spoilers? It's basically the aftermath of the very ruinous ending of book one and all of the characters kind of just having to deal with grief and figure out where the heck they're going next before this giant war starts. And it was really fun because we get three different settings in book two as compared to book one, where we really just see the forest. So we get to explore witches and sirens and valkyries, and yeah
a lot of plot twists and truth bombs dropped on us, so be prepared.
Cliffhangers.
Yes. One of the non-spoilery things that I have in here that I thought would be fun is giving like a music comparison for the vibes of like book one versus book two, because they're so different. Like, book one is obviously like action, adventure, like start, like everyone's happy and excited. Let's do this.
I was gonna say, everyone's together and they're like, yeah. We're going to the forest.
Yes. And then book two is very much like, okay, we didn't, didn't pan out the way we thought. Let's.
Everything is terrible.
Yeah. Book one is like, everything is awesome. And then I don't even know what book two is. I also was telling Loretta while I was reading it that it feels very much like, this is a compliment, by the way, like for anybody listening. Like, it gives off Lord of the Ring vibes for me. Mm-hmm. Because they have such a big ensemble in Lord of the Rings, and you follow everybody around, and like you start off in Fellowship and you're like, yay, we're going on an adventure. And then you get to the second half and you're just like, okay, it's taking longer than expected. Cool.
Everything's going wrong.
Yeah.
That is a huge compliment. No, literally though, right? Because I also kind of, I'm glad that it felt that way, because I really wanted them to have very different vibes. I was also in a very different place writing them, so that makes sense. But yeah, music comparison, if we're talking Taylor Swift, because, I mean, to be honest,
we're always talking Taylor Swift.
Yeah. We thought that would be the easiest way, route, is like, choose the Taylor Swift songs.
Oh, for sure.
Well, the era.
I have playlists that's like, okay, here are actual songs, like, a range of songs that can apply to the book. And then here's the Taylor Swift playlist version of the book.
Are the playlists publicly available? I feel like we asked this last time. They're on Spotify?
Yes, they are on Spotify, the first one, for Ruinous Fate. I am currently making the one for Reckless Oath to release.
We'll add it to the description for everybody.
Yeah. Yes. It's basically like the first one is like Miss Americana and the Heartbreak Prince and Ready for It. And
perfect.
I know places, you know, like kind of like they have those like really nice moments with like cool beats and it's like, okay, like, yeah, this could be fun. And then you get into book two and it's like My Tears Ricochet. And
yeah.
Every depressing song ever. Like, this is me trying. Like, I think of Delphi when I, like,
oh, yeah.
Listen to that now. Yeah. So it's just, the 180 is funny.
Yeah.
Feelings.
It was heavy. It took me a while. I was like, wow, they're going through it.
Which makes sense with everything that happens, but
I think I mean, I could tell a lot of stories about writing book two and the place that I was in. 2023 was something. And there's something about, gosh, there's something about writing a book on contract and having like a very like hardcore time crunch. We can talk about other future timelines that have gone awry, but with book two, I was like I need to prove myself. I need to like get this in. And then I ended up rewriting like 85,000 words before my very final deadline, like 2 weeks before my very final deadline. And it was for the best. Like, my editor and I both agreed. I think the book went the exact place I needed to. But part of the reason it was so hard is because I was like, Kala should be allowed to be kind of both depressed and the worst, like and Gideon, like, I was like, he should kind of be allowed to be like the worst right now. I mean, like, he just,
for sure,
happens. So I really wanted to give myself space to write that, and like, I knew immediately, I was like, the tone is going to be so different, and there's this like pressure that readers who really loved book one, I was like, could really hate this, like, could really hate this 360. But I think I'm finally at a place writing books that I'm like, okay, I have to be happy with it first and foremost, and then I'll get to the disappointment of everybody else. But
well, we both loved it. We enjoyed the 360, and it felt very natural, and it felt like exactly what you said. Like, that's where it needed to go. I wouldn't have expected it to have the same vibe.
If they were all happy, that would be like, yeah. What?
Like, it's okay, guys.
Yeah.
So true.
And before we get into the spoiler section for everybody who wants to come back and listen after they finish book two, I did think, because I know that we don't have this, I don't think, in book one or book two, so everybody needs to come back and listen to this episode if they want to know. A pronunciation guide for like all of the main places and all of the character names, because I feel like for every single thing, Loretta and I have a different pronunciation. I'm just like, I just
need, we were to just know, debating it before
I just need this. I just need a confirmed, author approved list of pronunciation for all of like the continent names and the city names and some of the characters that we meet in book two.
Oh my gosh, it's so funny. Okay, yes, let's do it. You know what? I am a fan of people like pronouncing stuff in text for readers, but sometimes it's just like not an easy thing to write into the book. And I was like, oh, I really should help people out, because every time someone says like Calliope, I feel horrible. I have failed y'all. I am so sorry. Okay, yeah. So let's start with Calliope, and I call her Kala. And then we have Gideon Black, Ezra Black, Hannah, Delphine, Caspian, Kestrel. Who else? Miria.
Okay, I was saying Maria.
That was one of, I was saying Myria.
Miria, okay.
Miria sounds way better.
I was like, this looks like a different way to say Maria. Like, I'll go with that. Okay, Miria.
Getting creative with it. Yeah, Miria, Lysandra, Ignia. Who else? What else? Oh, the continents and things. So we have Illustros.
Okay.
Estrella.
Okay, I was saying it like totally the Spanish way. I was like, yeah, it's two L's. You gotta make the yes sound. Yeah. Like,
no, it's so funny because I actually have a few Spanish-speaking readers who have like said that, and I mean, like, that's perfectly. That name actually came from because it means star, right, in Spanish.
Yes.
And I had an uncle who used to call his like nieces and nephews that, so it's like, oh, that's perfect. Yeah. So that's fully valid. But I say Estrella because, well. and then let's see what else. We have in book two, we'll kind of like learn some more of the world and other continents. The entire world is called Aetherius, and okay, we have
that was a question that I had.
Yeah, we could talk about that. Illustros is like just one continent, and it's very big because, you know, there are plans, you know, always.
We're waiting. We can go into that when we get to spoilers.
Yeah.
I think there's Noctum, Bellator, Rhenial, Raymer, Jack.
Zephyr. Jack.
And then, Zephyr's.
Zephyr.
Is it Celeste?
It is Celeste.
Yeah. Okay.
And then it's Lyra, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when they say the nickname, is it Lee or is it Lai?
It's Lai.
Okay. I was like, it's Lee, Lear. I was like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's between like a Lyra and Lyra. I think it depends on your local dialect, to be honest. But yeah, when they say their nickname, it's Lai.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, and then Sabine.
Mm-hmm.
And Amina, of course. I think that's everybody.
Mm-hmm, I think so. And then Indra and Agnes.
Yes.
Okay.
Those are. I won't say until again.
Okay. I couldn't remember if those names had been brought up in book one or not. So I was like,
I don't think so.
No, they
okay. Didn't. Okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of development that happens.
Yeah, I was like, what is going on? We do have questions. So if we don't have anything else that's non-spoilery for book one or two, we have our pronunciation guide, we have our vibe set, we have elevator pitches done. If you haven't listened to the first episode with Kaylee, we'll link that out as well. So you can listen to that episode and catch up on just all about Aruna's fate, and you can just get insight into that and get her thoughts, and then we can now jump into the section where we will be talking about spoilers, because Red and I have already finished A Reckless Oath and we have questions. we have thoughts.
Yeah,
so everyone who hasn't finished this book, please stop here and then come back when you're done, so that way you can get all of your questions answered, because we are 100% sure you are going to have questions and that you will want answers. So, this is your last official warning. We will be talking about spoilers now.
Let's go. Our notes are just like all caps yelling.
No, it's just screaming.
Yes. Do we get to meet the third queen? Because we only meet two. Like, we only really know two of them.
We will, for sure. Gosh, it's just like, when building out a fantasy world, especially in YA, I have such a...
it's a lot.
I have a constricted word count, okay? Basically, is how that works. And it's like, okay, what can I build out per book, reasonably? And so I knew everyone was going to want backgrounds on Hannah and Delphine and Caspian in book one, but I was like, book one, we really have to focus on the trio, right? And then book two, I was like, okay, Amina and Delphine, very key pieces to this puzzle.
Yeah.
And then in book three, it's like, okay, things, we have Blood Warriors, we have all three groups, and then we have the third queen, as well as Queen Ignea. Well, obviously, is a huge piece of this puzzle.
Yes.
Well, the Valkyrie queen. So we will meet the third one. She is just, she's not as she's linked there. To the yeah, she's not as linked to the main characters because obviously Miria and Calla have like a specific history, and Calla's a Rouge witch, so that's her queen, and then obviously Queen Lysandra, the Onyx Queen, is literally Ezra and Gideon's mother.
Yeah,
so,
mother. Yeah.
The third queen, I was just like, we have to save her.
Yeah, I'm excited. I think this is a good. Okay, so now we go back to book two, where we all started. It's like getting into what happens after the aftermath of the Witch Eater doing everybody dirty, and like the fate.
What a shyster
doing
that
dirty.
That person is.
And like, I honestly don't understand, like, if they were because. Gideon and Calla find the cabin again. And, like, the Witch Eater obviously wanted you to go into that cabin.
Oh, my God.
Like, Calla show up.
Like, Calla chases that rabbit, and then the door magically opens, and she goes in, and I'm like, are you kidding me?
You know what? Yeah, no. Calla is the definition of, like, curiosity.
And then Gideon shows up, and he's like, what are you doing?
And then he's the one that ends up taking the
thing, and
yeah.
I think, so what I really want to, and I don't know if it came across or not, but I'll just tell you, like, from an author's perspective when you read that part, because, it's so funny. I've had a couple of people read the arc, and, like, they talk to me about it, and they're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they went in, and, like, of course it was a trap, and I
would have gone in.
That out. Right, I was like, I consider that I am also a stupid bitch. I also would have gone, because, like, I can't pass up an opportunity. But also, I was like, their headspaces, they're desperate. Like, Callie sees that, and it's like, oh, is there something in there? Like, what do I do? Like, is there something I can get Ezra back? Like, it's just one, it's a very one-track mind. And I was just like, yeah, I do feel like she'd be foolish enough to kind of go in, and then Gideon would go in and see something and, like, be like, damn all of the consequences. I know this is a bad idea, but if it gets me closer to getting Ezra back, I will do it. Like, I don't care. And we
that
see
makes
that
sense, thing. Yeah.
We see that behavior from him throughout the book. There's yeah. the whole thing with the hole. And
that was wild.
Let me just jump in.
That was wild to me because he dives into the hole, and then afterwards, Hannah and Caspian are like, you think you're okay? And he's like, yeah, it's fine. I don't hear screaming.
Yeah. Caspian's fed up. He's like,
he's over everybody.
Poor guy.
He's like,
I know.
Dude.
He's like
I'm exhausted. Yeah. Can I be yeeted out of this forest?
Yeah.
I just picture him in the background, like, pinching his nose the whole time, being like, I can't believe this is happening again. Like, I can't believe we're doing this again.
They're giving that man such a migraine. Like,
he's like, I just killed a bunch of zombies. Can we not dive into mysterious holes, please?
No, literally. Oh my God.
I also was really surprised that we find out that Caspian is, like, the leader of all of the soldiers.
That was cool.
Faking their roles. And
I
was
love
like,
that.
What? Because they mentioned, like, oh, yeah, what Caspian is doing on the front lines with the guild or whatever. And they're like, what are you talking about? And they're like, oh, it's none of your business. Bye.
It's, yeah, we learned so much more, too, about him. Caspian, I mean, there's a lot that goes into his character, like, both just as a character in this series, like, the role he plays, and also, like, as like, a sort of, like, through a political optics of me writing him as a character, right? And, like, really, really wanting to make sure that he wasn't sidelined, or that he wasn't just a side character that kind of furthers Gideon's story. Like, he's not just that best friend stereotype. And I always knew, I was like, Caspian's going to be the one that leads this. Like, he's, I think he's effortlessly what Gideon so desperately wants to be, which I think is why they work as well. Because Caspian knows what Gideon wants to be, but he's
charismatic, and Gideon is like, you just need to trust me because I have plans.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so I was like, it makes sense that people would trust Caspian, especially given Gideon's proximity to Lysandra. Like, I was like, to be honest, Gideon and Kestrel being ahead of any sort of rebellion was just not a thing that I think would have worked. So So when I envisioned it, I was like, Caspian's absolutely the person who had to recruit all these people and be like, trust me, he's like one of the good ones. Like, and I just really wanted to give him his own agency. And also I'm just like proud of him. What a good little being.
I love him. Yeah.
And what a swell guy.
Him and Hannah in this book were so cute together. I love
them. I know.
They have one of my favorite relationship. She's like his little sister.
Yeah, it's so cute.
Yeah, they're
he calls her little witch and I die a little each time.
Angels, I know. I'm really so excited to like especially their bond and stuff. And when I was looking, and my editor and I were talking about like the relationships and like who ends up getting closest in this book, Gideon and Calla very selfishly, and I mean like not unvalidly, right? In their very own world. They have a lot going on. So it's just like, it makes sense. Caspian and Hannah are like, we're just holding on. Yeah.
We're the ones like, left and we need each other.
Yeah. They're like, come pick us up when you're ready.
Yeah. We'll be in the demonic forest.
No, exactly.
I also love, because you're talking about how Caspian is like, of course, he's the one who's leading all of this and he has like the charm and the trustworthiness, the vibes of like getting people to follow him. And there are a few specific scenes with Amina where she's like thinking to herself and she's like keeps thinking about Caspian for whatever reason.
I love that.
And then
yeah.
She finds out that he's the one who is like helping lead the rebellion against the witches. And she's like, God damn it. Like, I need to stop thinking about this man. Like, what's come on?
Yeah, no, exactly. It's especially because, I mean, I won't spoil anything, but I think we can all kind of see the seeds of the
I'm so excited for the reunion.
Yeah.
And it's like when I was thinking about like how these characters come together and what reasons do they have to stay together and also their fates in at the end of the war, because I mean obviously we know the war is coming. I was like, what kind of person would Amina be able to tolerate? And she's like, if there's one thing I love, it's someone who will take action, right, for what they believe in. She's the exact same kind of person. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She's just a little more hardened, where he is like, I had a great childhood.
Oh my god, that cracked me up.
I love everything.
I love it.
I'm not gonna lie though, speaking of Amina, she kind of got on my nerves the entire book until like the very last few chapters. I was like, you've been gone, bro. Like, you've been gone for so long. Why are you so upset that people are, like, trying to live their life? Why are you so mad that they're like, hey, just, you know, maybe tell us what you're thinking since you've been gone for a while. And, like, we don't want you to get banished again. Like, can you just, like, give us a little bit? Why don't you trust me anymore? And I'm like, Amina, come on, girl. Like, get it together.
Yeah, no, that is so true. Like, to be honest, and very intentional, because I feel like if anyone has had the experience, a lot of Amina's story and character art was just based on my own experience, like, of seeing friends that you all used to be equally close. Like, we all, like, sometimes three's a crowd. Like, I think we've all kind of experienced that sort of friendship before, you know, we were, like, adults, and we knew how to bounce, like, you can have multiple best friends, but when you're a teen, it's like you see people that you were equally close with start to get closer to each other, and that like very specific kind of pain to be like, I don't understand why you don't like me as much as you used to, or like don't like me as much as them. Like, why do you call them first? Why do you text them first? Why do they know stuff about your love life or dating life that you're just telling me now because it happened to come up in front of me? Like, and I know those are such specific examples, but like, that's fully where it derived from.
Yeah, you're right. I'm reading this as a 30-year-old woman, and I'm like, girl, I'm not reading this as a 16-year-old anymore. You're right.
Yeah, it's like, and I mean, like, I think when your frontal lobe develops, like, you start to see, like, okay, like, yeah, proximity, like familiarity, like daily basis, talking to someone, like obviously they're going to be closer than you. Like, you just have to, it's just like a thing you live with. Also, it doesn't mean that we're not good friends or that I wouldn't extend the same things I do to you as this other person, but it's just different. And I think as a teen, that's a really weird thing to navigate, like especially when you're doing it for the very first time.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think it's really valid to be annoyed by it, because yeah,
there's like, a war. The war is coming.
It's been 6 years. Yeah, but she gets there. She learns, and I also definitely wanted her to be able to like have the room for all those really big emotions too, because there's like more important things going on, but like also she's been banished for 2 years. Like imagine having like no one to talk to but the witch eater.
Oh my god. Oh god.
I would have loved the plot twist that they like are besties now. She's like, yeah, the witch eater and I just got, we only had each other.
We hang out.
And then she's also jealous of the witch eater's familiar. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, here we go again. You and him talk more than me and you.
That bitch.
But I also, now that we're out talking about the Valkyries, we'll just like go through each of the groups that we follow along, and we'll save Delphine for last because her story was hard, but it's so rewarding. Like, yes, the finally. But we do learn some stuff about the Valkyries, and we learn that Queen Ignea created the Heartbreak Prince curse. Mm-hmm. And Loretta went back into book one and like
I was like, I remember this part, and I took a picture of the paragraph where Kestrel's telling everyone about the Heartbreak Prince curse, and I sent it to Deb about the lore. I was like, oh my god.
And it's like a mortal falls in love with an immortal, and then the mortal gets their heart broken and then goes to the fates and is like, I want this person to be punished. And then they didn't word it correctly. So then the immortal prince gets the curse put upon him. And that's how it all starts. So we learn that she created the curse. And then we also learn that she was in love with a dragon shifter. Mm-hmm. And something goes wrong and Amina gets blamed. And then his heart gets taken out and saved. And that she also made a contract, a deal, and all of this started because they had to start reaping souls fast. Yep. And that's why the Valkyries are where we are. So, like, there's a lot of stuff that you learn, but then also we have more questions about it. So I'm just like, is the dragon shifter the first ever heartbreak prince? Is that what we're saying? Like, what? I don't know if you can answer that. It's just like, I'm spitballing here. What else do we learn? And then they also summon somebody at the end of the book in the epilogue. And at first I thought it was going to be Ezra because they're like, oh yeah, I know who to bring back to make them more amenable to like come with us because they need to go track down Kala. But then I was like, no, because Ezra's heart is in the palace and they didn't go back to the palace, I don't think. And his body also wasn't buried in a coffin. But then Amina has the dragon shifter's soul already in her Esprit, is that how you say it? Mm-hmm. But when they're doing the ceremony, they summon the soul from somewhere else. So I'm like, is it neither of these two people? Like, what is going on? I just have a lot of questions. So, like, any clarity?
Okay. What I will say is, as we kind of learned at the beginning of the book, where I think the nymphs, they're like, hey, we need this soul, we need this heart, like, how do you bring someone back? And they're like, you just need a heart, right? So you can bring someone back with any heart. It doesn't matter. It just has to be a heart. So I'll say that. And then I will just say, Amina does have the Rovan is his name, the dragon.
Oh, yes, that's his name.
And his Esprit. But she does summon a soul instead. So... this will be really fun for when we talk about book three, which I'll just say very obviously has to happen. I mean, like, you know, it's happening. Like,
if it doesn't, I will hurt someone. I don't know.
Happening. The timeline has gotten a little screwed up. I got very, very sick this year. I won't be too serious about it, but like very sick. So unfortunately, book things, it's just gonna be a little longer than the length of time between book one and book two, which I'm very sorry about, but you know, stuff happens.
It's okay.
As long as we know it's coming.
Yeah.
But it's coming, which I hope is relieving. But yeah, basically, wait, what was I saying? The whole like
Dang she it. Summons a soul. So we know that. You can bring anybody back with any heart. It doesn't need to be their heart.
Yeah.
And they do have a body.
Oh, that is a man. That's what I'm saying. Wait, this is the point that we're going to come back to later on. Is Sabine is the one who sacrifices her wings to bring the soul back. And we'll learn more about...
Is that significant?
Yes. Or it will be. You will like that detail in book three, I promise.
Okay, cool.
Right now, it's like, whatever. Like, she did it for Amina. But in book three, it will be a very fun little, like, aw, detail. So, yeah. And we'll learn more about the sacrificing ritual, like, how it works. Like, obviously, Sabine will have to grow her wings back. We'll learn all the consequences of summoning a soul. It's not an easy thing to do. And so, yeah.
I'm so ready. I also really liked, separate from this, just Valkyrie lore, I guess, or magic, is that they have a tree that they can go to
for, like, I loved that part.
Their true name. And I was like, oh, I just wish this was real. And everybody just forgets their dead name. And it's just replaced.
That was so cool.
Their true name. And I was like, this is so nice. Like, I love this for people.
I'm so glad. Yeah, I've had a couple of, like, readers who are trans, and they, like, reach out and they're like, is Sabine trans? Like, am I reading this correct? I'm like, yes, she is. It's probably my favorite little bit of lore ever, because it's just, it's like a little piece of happy amongst
chaos amongst and destruction.
I always, like, I was just like, what do I want this to look like? I didn't want it to be something you had to, like, really sacrifice anything for. I don't think that's fair. I think I wish so desperately that it was just an easy thing to do. And so I just love the idea that all you have to do is you go to this tree and you get to carve in your true name. And then even yourself, like, you will never remember that dead name again. Like, that's just so fun. Also, magically, like, whatever, however you identify, like, your pronouns even are replaced in everyone's head as well. As we see with the Wayfarer, who is like, this bitch.
Oh my god, they were cracking me up.
She's like, I have a new name.
I'll dance with you. And he's like, no.
No.
I really hope the Wayfarer comes back. I really hope he is, like, this bigger, like, because he's out looking for his own stuff too, and he's cursed, and we don't know really why or what's going on, but it seemed important, so.
I'm just going to say, he is something I added. My editor was kind of like, do we need this? And I was like, I am not deleting it. I added to for myself, because I have plans for him. Nothing that is, like, a thing yet, but one day I have so many plans for that man.
I'm excited.
Like, this, like, hot guy that everyone's like, wow, he's really beautiful, too bad he can't stick around. And I'm like, okay, maybe one day he finds somebody, and oh, maybe.
Yeah, it's like, it's just so heartbreaking. Like, imagine a person who can never revisit the same place twice. That's wild.
I know.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, they're so beautiful. Like, how tragic.
And then Virgo me is like, well, how does it count location? Like, if he's in one place and he doesn't leave that one spot, and then he moves over to the next, like, little square of land, does that count?
That's so fair. When one day, if I ever get to tell his story and his adventure, there are, like, limitations to the magic,
yeah, things
stuff,
that he's tried.
Yeah,
because if it were me, if I was cursed that way, I'd be like, I'm gonna try out everything so that way I don't run out of maps or worlds or places for a really long time.
It's pretty much like a magically set perimeter. Like, it's like a certain mile radius. Every place he goes, so yeah, like, it can never overlap. Tragic for him. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also just his whole thing is, like, the idea of never being able to go home, right? And so, like, learning the lesson that sometimes home is people and not necessarily places. But anyway, I digress.
That makes me happy, though. I'm excited.
I know. I am here. If we need to, like I said, I'll start a petition. I'll send an email. Can we get this side story? Can we get a novella?
I love that people are loving him. My best friend Elba, literally, that is her favorite character I've ever come up with. And I'm like, he's on page for 5 pages. I don't care. She's like, I love him.
Yeah. I think it's just like, obviously the fact that he's attractive, but also that he helps them, like, for no reason. Yeah. For no, quote, no reason. Or he's just like, mm-hmm. yeah, like, I needed something fun to do. Like, I'll help. Yeah. Here you go. Here's my distraction. Yeah. Bye.
The boredness you must feel. And like, finally, and also I think that it's so funny because it's such a small, minute interaction, but when you kind of dig into like the information we do know about him, like the fact that he's seeing the same people twice, like, doesn't happen to him very often. So it's
true.
It's probably, so it's like, he hates me, but he's also like, this is kind of exciting.
Yeah. And just like the,
hey, I know you,
like the giddiness that Sabine had too when she was telling everybody, oh my God, like, the Wayfarer's here. Like, I'm so excited to go see him.
By the way, I absolutely love Sabine so much. She cracked me up. Oh my God.
She is a menace to society.
I love her. I love when Lyra comes in and she's like, I found the heathen. It's Sabine.
No, her and Delphine, okay, together.
Just, oh my God.
I'm ready for that. I also love that she tried to steal something from the queen's room. And then Amina is like, put it back.
Hand it over.
She made a logical point. She's like, you can take a contract and a heart, and I can't take like a shiny trinket. Like, are you kidding me?
Yep.
I would have been like, I'm not giving it back, bro.
My favorite chapter, I'm just going to say it for myself, is she wakes up in that guy's bed and she calls him a different name.
Like, oh, yeah. Oh, my God. That was cracking me up. Miles, Michael.
Yep. She's trying to like sneak out, and then she sees something shiny, and she's like, wait, I'm gonna go back for this. Yeah. He'll never remember.
Yeah. And that detail will also be fun later. But if anyone wants to go reread that part, be like, wait.
I'm absolutely gonna go reread it, because she does describe it in detail. Like, it's shiny and it has like jewels or something on it. So.
Yeah, one thing about me as a writer is if I spend more than, like, 2 seconds on something, just assume it might come back later.
Good to know.
Like, marking up every description ever. Okay, this is just a fun fact about me as a reader, is I have gone back to the spell that the Witch Eater performed on Calla and Gideon so many times. So I'm like, I know I can read this. I know that there are words in here. I haven't sat down with it for enough time to figure it out. I've gotten like a few words here and there, and I'm like, Loretta, what does this say? And I've like picked out words, but like, I'm 100% going back, and I am going to solve that riddle because I know that it's important.
Yeah, there's like it's like a cipher. I can tell you the formula if everyone would like.
I think that's fun for everybody to like go back and figure it out.
Yeah. I was about to say, so if you want to know the formula.
Yeah, share it with everyone.
I was about to say, is that a spoiler? Do you want to figure it out yourself? Okay, no. So basically what you have to do is the very last letter in each word you bring to the front and then you reverse the entire word.
Oh. So, cool. Yep.
All right, I'm going to go back in.
I just want to say that making that happen and then having to pronounce it myself for the audiobook narrators, I wish everyone could hear my recordings, because you have to like do like voice memo recordings and like
send
to them. I could barely get through them. I was laughing so hard. I was like, it's just nonsense. I don't know. Like, just make it up.
You can literally say it however you want.
I was laughing so hard. My husband was like, what is going on? They did a really good job, though, because...
Yeah, I'm going to go back in and read that, though. So, moral of this whole story is everyone go back and read the tiny details, because they're all going to be important.
Yes.
Okay, I think we can go and skip into Delphine's story before we get to, like, the final few scenes with the Witch Queens, because I also want to get to that.
That was madness, yeah.
But Delphine deserves a section, because she's going through it. She has a rough time, but... Her last, like, what, 2 to 3 chapters?
Oh, my God,
I was like,
so good.
This is the redemption. Like, this is the the closure that I needed.
It was so satisfying.
I was so happy for her. I was like, I need to cry. I need to, like, do something. I need to let it out. It's so sweet. Like, she's free, but she got tortured, and we learned about her and her mom, and I was like, wow, like, there's a lot of trauma there that I was not expecting. And Loretta has some feelings about Celeste that I'll let share.
No, she just bugged me, and I didn't really have a lit, like, I understood why she acted the way she did, and so I don't really have, like, a rational reason for disliking her, but I was like, I want you to go away.
I will say that my perspective of it was, I believe that it was because we're reading it through Delphine's point of view, and so to her, Celeste is annoying because she's like, you didn't come with me the first time, so, like, right. Why are you here? Like, every interaction that we see, if it was from, like, Eros's perspective or somebody else's perspective, it would be like, oh, she's being so genuine, she's being so nice, and Delphine is being mean. But because we see it from Delphine's perspective, she's just like, can you go away? Like, I don't, everything you're saying is annoying me. Like, I don't trust you.
We're not a thing anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's very much that. I mean, because there's, like, so much history. And I think also, like, the sense of betrayal that Celeste, you saw mostly what I went through here, what Reneal does to people, and you didn't leave. And now you brought me back, so you can ask me for something. Girl. Move on.
Yeah, no. It's been a decade.
I really want to know if Delphine's mom is going to show up at any point.
I was wondering about that, too.
We learn a lot about that relationship and how it ended and how she, like, took money to not see her anymore. But then by the end, Reniel's magic is locked up and Delphine's oath is unlocked. And so she's not tied to anybody anymore. And so if his magic is, like, completely gone, does that mean all of the oaths and all of the things that have been sworn to him are also just broken? Or do people still have to follow those?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much they're, like, dissolved. Like, I mean, it's locked. It's, like, it's, the rules of magic in the world kind of is, like, when you cut off the source, like, the oaths and things break. What I will say, though, for book three, at least, we might get, like, a conversation between Hannah and Delphine, right, about her mom, like, what she went through, and, Hannah and Calla already know a little bit of, like, the trauma, but Delphine isn't the kind of person who's ever, like, divulges a lot of personal stuff. She doesn't mm-hmm. She isn't like feeling vulnerable in that way, and we'll kind of see her come to this conclusion, which I think I would come to as a person myself, is that she's like, even if I could, I don't want to, like, let her continue to believe that is still a thing, because her mom won't know. I mean, unless, you know, word starts to spread from the sirens. Mm-hmm. Just I feel like my own relationships with certain family members and things, when I think about it, I'm just like, even if I could, I think it's done. I think I have the closure. I think she's gone through all of it. She did it herself, and she's just like, I'm gonna let that rest forever.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, especially considering how her mom was before.
It's just, like, sometimes it's, like, not even worth it. It's, like, you knew you had a relationship with that person. You know you're related to them. But they exist somewhere in the world. I mean, like, honestly, she doesn't even know if her mom's dead or alive. I don't see her. I think there's, like, a lesson there. Like, she is complete and whole in and of herself, and she's good.
Yeah. The moment she unlocks her oath and she just feels lighter and she's just like, yeah. I was like, oh my God, yes, I love this for you. And you did it. And you went back for Celeste even though you didn't want to because Hannah told you to.
The moment, the moment when Reniel has her, like, pinned or whatever, and then she starts laughing, and he's like, what the fuck? Why are you laughing? And then she sticks the key in him. Oh my God, that was so satisfying.
Yeah, it was just, the whole thing about that ending scene, like, the culmination to that point, I was like, this is so satisfying. Like, they tortured her, and then he bound her again, and then she's like, don't worry, I got it. I figured it out. I also want to know who Bellator, I think that's how you say his name, Reniel's brother, is talking about when he says, when you see him again, can you tell him that, like, I hope he's happy or whatever. Dying. He says something. Yeah. I was like, wait, who is he talking about? Like, who is, does Delphine know that also knows about, like, what? I need to know. I need answers. I
will say, some people actually have already figured it out. Some ARC readers figured out exactly who he is.
Impressive.
I have to agree because I've left. Okay. It's definitely something you can figure out. But it's, I think I was like, y'all are like very shrewd readers because I think I would have had a hard time as a reader until three. It is possible though. And I've had, I think, three different people DM me being like, is this who this person is? And they're correct.
That's so wild. Cause I had no, I was trying to like rack my brain again. I didn't reread book one like Loretta did. Yeah, so if we need information from book one for this to make sense, like I'm out.
It's so minute. It's like definitely breadcrumbs. It's definitely one of those things I wanted it to be when you read book three. It's like, oh my, like, how did I miss that? But also so hard when you don't have the full scope of the situation.
Yeah, I was just like, who is he talking about? I also really like his character for whatever reason.
Me too.
Like, even when we see him when she's like 10 and he's like, you don't want to do this. Like, trust me. She's like, who are you? And he's like, nobody.
She's like, so precocious. Yeah.
Yeah.
My juxtaposition of him is kind of like, okay, there's a very like insidious, dark undertone of Rhaenyal and Delphine's relationship, right? It's not sexual, but it's weird. Like, you've known her since she was 10.
Yeah.
There are undertones.
We got icky vibes when we were reading. He's like, so you don't want to go back to his room tonight. And then she walks back in the next morning and all his clothes
are
leading to the bed. And she's just like, oh yeah, I guess he was right. And I was like, this is not it.
Yeah. He's awful. But like also in a way that like he sees her as his trophy. Like he would marry her. Like, that's the undertone, right? Like, he would absolutely have married her, but not because
of just to be like, look at how beautiful she is.
Like,
she knows all your secrets.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, kind of like a keep your enemies closer. Like, I want to have the prettiest thing in the room. Like, mm-hmm. collect people. And so Bellator, it was really important to me, even when we see him in those flashbacks when she's very, very young, that is not the vibe he gives at all. It's more like a, like an uncle being like, oh.
Yeah, like a protector.
Kid. Yeah.
Yeah, really bad idea. My brother's the worst. but yeah, so we'll learn a lot more about Bellator. I actually really like him as a character. He was really, especially, obviously, I know who he is in relation to the entire world and stuff. And so it was really fun to be able to write him before the reader knows who he is in relation to it, because it's like, I don't know, it's like a little secret I got to keep.
Yeah.
And like,
he seems important. He seemed like from the very beginning, like he's the dude who's behind the scenes, who's like, mm-hmm. knows everything. And he's like, I'm not important. Don't worry about me. And then he leaves and you see that he's like a secret king or something. And you're like, oh, that's fine. He knows the Sea King, apparently, and we know that he has had a lot of connections with other people that Rhaenyal has tried to, like, ruin. Yeah. And apparently we know that he's been, like, out of the Siren Sea because he knows people that Delphine knows, so.
Right, exactly.
I'm excited for more of him.
I'm glad people, but it's, like, I also, it's just, like, incredible to me how, like, smart readers are. I mean, I always think my readers are smart, but it gets me as an author so excited when people pick up on those characters. Like, for all intents and purposes, he has barely a role in this book. Like, it's a long book, and, like, he's only in very specific parts, very specific scenes. But the fact that, like, you even bring his name up, I'm like, okay, like, he did, you know, like, I did my job. Like,
he left an impression.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, exactly. So I love that. I love seeing how readers, like, pick out the important pieces, and it'll be fun for book three, too.
Yeah, I'm so excited. I need answers. And then, to get back to where we first started with the witches, we're now back to Gideon, Kella, Hannah, Caspian, and guess who shows up? Everyone's favorite, Kestrel, with all his soldiers.
The timing of that whole thing was just amazing.
Gideon and Kella are like having their moment. They're like, oh my god, the forest.
The most magical butterfly kiss, literally. And then Kestrel's like, hey.
They like have their moment. They learn that the forest like listens to them, and then all of a sudden they're like, someone's here, and they turn around, and like Kestrel's like, I hope I'm not spoiling anything. Like, you know you are. You know no one wants you here.
Kestrel's official motto is always here to ruin the vibe. I knew how it was gonna play out, obviously, because it was like, there's gonna be a kiss in this book. It's gonna be ruined by him. So I was like so excited for the timing of it. And that butterfly scene, when it came to me, I was like, oh, this is so fun. Like I loved writing that part. And it's so funny because this is, I think, the most romantic that Gideon and Kella have gone to be. But then when you read the next one, like, I go all in with the romance finally. I'm like, oh, I can be free because they can be together.
By the way, that scene where they drink the potion, like they're in, what is this, Jack's house, and then they drink the potion, and then he spills his guts, and then they forget it. Oh my god, I was like, are you kidding me?
I think that's my favorite part of the book, because I remember what it was like to be a teen, you know, and if I had read that as a teenager, it would have rocked, it would have
died,
ruined my
dead.
Whole world. Yeah, like, over, dead. That would be a moment where I, like, put the book down and be like... and especially because it was like, oh, he just needs to say it. Like, say it one time. And he's like, this is really selfish, but, like, we're both going to forget it. And they sure as hell do.
He spills his guts and it's amazing. And I was, like, highlighting everything. I was like, oh, my God.
He says one of my favorite lines in the book to her when he's doing that. Like, every wish I've ever had has been granted in you.
And shut up. I know.
One of my favorite lines. And I'm like, it's so funny because they're definitely going to forget.
I, like, drew a circle around it and stuff. Are you kidding me?
There's also this, like, the whole, she's going to forget that he bought her those earrings that she had been staring at in the pawn shop.
Oh, yeah.
And she's gonna
when she pulled that back. Box out of the backpack and she's like, oh, and she puts it away. I was like, that's what you get for being a snoop.
Yeah.
Dead. No, it's so, dead.
It's just like so funny. Like the little things that make Gideon. And I'm like, oh, yeah, he's down. He's down horribly.
Yeah. My favorite line was when he tells Kestrel, hearts don't know time, or hearts don't understand time, and he goes into this whole, like, your heart will, like, doesn't know somebody in winter, but it'll meet, you'll mean everything. By spring. And I'm like, oh, that's so true, but it's so nice and it's so fun.
Dev was ahead of me and she texted me and she was like, what is it, hearts
I
don't
said
know,
out of yeah
hearts don't know time, or
it's hard to not tell time.
So oh, yeah, yeah.
Nothing to you in the dead of winter.
She just texted me that, and she was like, something to look forward to.
Yeah. And then out of context quote, because, like, it could be bad thing or good thing. So I was just like, here you go. And I was like, oh, so good.
When I was really thinking about it, because I know people don't like instant love. And, like, when I think about it, too, like, why don't we like it? Like, or, like, it's for me, the whole instant love thing or whatever, it's always because I'm like, why? I mean, I think instant love is actually really, really realistic with teenagers. Like, I fell in love with everybody I saw when I was to be like funny or hot, like, whatever, or a woman. And so basically I was just like, but, like, what's the meat of it? Like, why don't people like this trope that's, like, obviously so utilized because of the nature of having such a time crunch in books sometimes? And to me, it's because it's like, why? Like, why are they so special? And, like, that's what Kestrel is really digging at, too. Like, how is she so special? Like, it's been a couple of weeks. And when I was really thinking about Gideon and, like, how he feels about Kella, and, like, more than just the connection, more than just the soul bond, it's Ezra's stories of her. It's listening about who she is as a person. Him finally feeling, like, comfortable and on equal ground with someone, because I can only imagine when you have a certain kind of authority that you have a lot of yes men, right? Like, mm-hmm. he's a prince, like, all his life. And it's finally someone that he feels like he's on equal ground with. And it's just that that whole line, like, I feel that so immensely about my own husband. I met him, and, like, 2 weeks later, I was like, this is my person forever. And it's so true. It's like, when I think about it, in August of 2013, this person meant absolutely nothing to me. And by the end of September, like, he was my entire world. So it's just like, that moment was just like, I was like, oh yes, like, it felt so good.
Yeah, that was my favorite. It's like, okay, now Kestrel, shut up. And he just, like, sits there and he's like, I'm not gonna help you cut the bars because you're gonna hate me anyway.
He started,
like,
that,
oh my god,
Kestrel. He started that conversation and I was like, are you kidding me right now?
Gideon too, he was like,
Seriously?
Worst time.
Oh my god.
And then Hannah's like overheating and everyone's like, what's happening? And Kestrel's just like, you know, she's overheating. She's overloading. Guess we'll just have to wait and see.
He's such a little bit. I will say, part of me that softens Kestrel to me was really bonding with him in the moment of him and Gideon in the carriage. And him being so devastated, right? He was just like, I don't get it. Like, I just wanted to, like, be your savior. And Gideon's like, this was never about you, but now it is. Like,
I love that line too.
That chapter was so satisfying for me. And I was just like, this is what you get. This is your consequence. Like,
on a somewhat related note, because we were just talking about the dungeon scene, Thorn is in the book for maybe, like, a page, and I love him.
Oh my
and I don't
god
know why.
When I read his intro, I texted Loretta and I was like, oh my god, I had to go back and reread the beginning of the book. And I went back and reread the prologue because I was like, wait,
what?
This is the guy, this is the dude. I was waiting for him to come back around, and then I forgot about him because so much stuff was going on, and then he comes back around and I was like, oh, it's here. And I went back and I reread the prologue and I was like, oh my god, they captured him.
Yes. Oh my, yeah.
She yells and he's like, can you keep it down?
Yeah. And then she's like,
just trying to get some peace.
Yeah. She's like telling him the story and he's like, oh great, it's the hallucinations finally happening.
They're running away and he's like, are we gonna go back for that guy? They're like, no.
Wait, that is literally my favorite thing he says. He's like, are we just gonna leave him? Here? Like, we're taking a random stranger, but it seems like y'all knew him. I don't know. Thorn is such a delight. And him and Caspian become, like, you know, very good friends.
I'm so excited.
Well, we see that, like, right away in book 3. And it's just so freaking funny. Because
I'm so like, ready. I also, my favorite part about the whole thing is that he heals some part of Kellis so quickly just by, like, nonchalantly being like, oh, blood siphon. Like, yeah, you're rare. You're cool. Like, you're chill with me. Let's do this. And she's like, I'm a blood siphon. I'm going to kill you all. I'm like, all right, let's do this.
I'm so excited to get into that, too, when we kind of, when they start finding all the other blood warriors and, like, there's a lot we can talk about that, but yeah, like in Illustros, they're very like, oh, people are weird about siphons and stuff like that, and she had never heard that word before. Like, let's, like, we have a name, like we garner enough respect to have our own, like, sector of beings. And he's like, yeah, like, how did you not know? Like,
yeah. He's like, whatever.
He's like, yeah, he's like, obviously the powerful people don't want you around because you're more powerful than them. Like,
yeah. Duh. And also just the idea that he's like, you can literally kill everyone in this room right now. Like, I don't. and then he mentions like, yeah, like they have a lot of them on Noctum, which is like the, like, nightmare continent kind of. And I was like, yeah, so we'll get to see. If my plans work out for other things and the Wayfarer's book, I hope we get to see a different side of Siphons that isn't necessarily through Kala's lens, because she's struggled with that so often. But that's him getting to heal her, like you said.
Yes.
Like, the most casual
Just like, yeah, you're chill. Go beat those guys up. I also, one of the questions that Loretta and I both had was, is it easy to travel between the continents? Because he throws out that he spent a good chunk of, like, his
younger years.
He's like,
oh, yeah, I traveled there. But then
somewhere else.
Things that other people have said have made it seem like it's really hard to get
Yeah, like, you're just stuck there.
So it literally depends on your magic, the people you know, and also, like, kind of who you ruled by. So, like, witches in this situation, like, when he was younger, he's much older than them. So it's like, he could travel. He didn't have the roles he had yet, right? Like, and so he was allowed to go a little more freely. But as the war kind of started getting closer and we got past, like, the fourth Blood Warrior, so we're over the halfway point, the Queen's really, like, tied in that leash. Like, yeah. Witches aren't going freaking anywhere. Like, all of you are staying here. So it's like traveling became a little harder. But, you know, people smuggle their children out or, like, not even smuggle. Just be like, I'm going.
You're going. Yeah.
Or they're pregnant and they go somewhere and it's like, well, now we have a blood warrior on this random part of the continent because my mom was a witch and she lived here with someone else. You know what I mean? So, yeah, they travel. I will say Alestros is a little bit different from some of the other continents. Some you can't, like, really go back and forth too well at all, and some are much more interconnected. I kind of have it all, like, floating around in my brain because I feel like world politics is really intricate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't have the space in this budget.
Fair.
But yeah, and then there are places like Estrella that are just like fully neutral, anyone can go. So I and like with things currently going on in the world, I also tried to be like as sensitive and educated about stuff as possible. So just wanting to make sure my world, like, we're not reinforcing anything that's like oppressive and stuff yeah. like that.
That makes sense. I was just more curious because I wanted to know if we see any of those other continents, if they travel anywhere. I mean, I'm assuming not all of the other blood warriors are on the continent because otherwise they would all just be like imprisoned somewhere. I don't know.
I didn't even think of that. But yeah.
So we don't know where the other people are. But yeah.
We definitely will. Namely Kala and Gideon because yeah. So
I'm so excited for all of these warriors.
Yeah.
Before we get to the final big reveal of Miria and Kala's parents, I wanted to go back to the Jack of all trades because I wasn't expecting him to be like the villain that he is. Just like when they see he's like the apartment owner, like, oh yeah, that's our guy, we pay him money, and then he shows up and he's like, you owe me favors now. So obviously he's gonna come back into the picture and be like,
I kind of love
you those favors. But like, is he human, is he not? Because they say he's human, but something tells me that like he's not just a normal human. Like, is he immortal, an immortal with no power? Like, there's something that we don't know about him, I'm assuming. Yes.
Yeah, it's so funny. He is actually one of the first characters I really fleshed out. I was originally going to write a book about his character, and then when I did A Ruinous Fate and like this role came up, I was like, oh, that's him. So I kind of like meshed some things together, and he became the character that he did here. But yeah, so the Jack of all trades is, and that's like his official like full name, which is so funny. He's very, 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 like, villain-esque, and I have very big plans with him in the way of the Wayfarer. And we'll learn a little bit more about this, but hopefully one day I'll get to, like, fully flesh him out, but the stuff that we'll know so far is he is a human, he is mortal, but there's a lot of stuff going on, and
he's mortal with an asterisk.
Exactly.
Mortal, however.
And I love to do stuff like that because, yeah, I mean, like, he sold Cal out to Raymer and Boone, like, that for, like, he knew she was going to show up. And he's very much just, I always wanted to write a character that was, like, for his own gain only. And, like, not right or wrong. It's not even morally gray. It's just like he will be on the correct side if the correct side suits his wants. And So he has this favor from Calla, and I think it'll be very interesting, like, and Gideon, how it, like, kind of plays out, because it's really just for him to have in his back pocket.
Yeah, like, that's what I was curious. I was like, these favors, they're giving out these favors to everybody. Yeah,
I know.
He's not, he has no actual, like, alliance to anything or anyone. Like, he's not an alliance with the Witch Queens, or it's, like, very much like him, like, his empire. And I think there's, like, a bit of ego and pride there, right? Being, like, the only human
that
immortals respect, like, every time he's mentioned by an immortal. So he's very interesting, and I'm excited to do stuff with him eventually.
I kind of love that, because he was a blip in the first book. Mm-hmm. Like, he's barely even mentioned, and then they burn his house down and they just run off into the woods. And then I love
about that.
I loved that he came back and he was like a bigger character. That was cool.
Yeah. I always knew that was going to happen. So I was like, it's going to be so, because at first my editor even was like, why are we giving this man a name? Like, just say landlord. Like, why are we naming him? And I'm like, yeah, yes, just wait.
He comes back. There's a plan.
And then like, she saw my plan. She was like, okay, I see what you're doing.
Yeah, you're like, got it.
She's used to my antics by now. She's like, I'm not going to ask Kay to cut anything, because there's a reason.
Now I'm like, I need to go back and reread everything and, like, pick out, okay, she spent more than two lines. Got it. This is important.
I know. I will say, after rereading book one and then reading book two immediately, like, back to back, I'm seeing a lot of the connections between stuff and, like, the timing of everything. Like, I can't even think of an example. Like, just how everything, like, perfectly works out, you know, fate and coincidence. And it makes me wonder, like, was that hard to write? I can't even imagine, like, trying to time everything. I'm imagining you as the Witch Eater, and you have, like, this giant board with a bunch of strings and stuff.
Yeah, literally. This has, like, been the hardest thing in the world. We'll kind of talk about some of my other projects later, but this is just a different sort of beast, and I hate to say it, but I really don't know if I'll ever be able to do something like this again. Not that I'm even doing this particularly, like, amazingly or anything. I'm trying my best, guys.
It's working. I think it's amazing. It's working. Yeah.
I'm trying so hard, because it is a lot to keep track of, and I really want it to all tie together and come together and stuff, and I don't want people to be so confused, like, I have no idea what's going on. Like, I'm really
You're doing a great job, which is why I'm asking, because I can't even imagine writing that.
I reread these books so many times when I'm writing the next one, and, like, writing the third one and being like, this is it. This is all the space I know I get to complete all of these breadcrumbs that I've started. And I sometimes sit down, and the reason it's taking me so long is, like, I don't know if I can do this, but I can, I will. And it's really just, like, diligently bullet pointing everything, like, going back through and being like, oh, I left a hint of this, so I have to close the circle here. Like, and when it comes to, I will say the hardest part is just immortals having such a wide range of ages, and the world having such a big timeline, right? Because it's
history.
And also, like, the time working differently in all of the different places.
Oh my god, the, like, time zones.
6 years being passed somewhere, and it's only been 2 years somewhere else, and it's just, like, it's a lot.
Like, Delphine and, like, her timeline and stuff. And then because I had a couple readers, like, they were just like, at first I was like, I don't understand when these events are happening, but then what I did was I used the device of, like, the blood moon happens technically at the exact same time.
Yes.
But the length of time it takes to get to that exact point, like, that
magic is different.
Is different in every place. So it's weird. I wanted to unite, like, when things are happening under the blood moon from Delphine, they're happening to Calla in the palace, and they're happening to the Valkyries. But, like, the amount of time they spent going up to that is all fully different. So I was just like, okay. Yeah. Also, copy editors, God bless copy editors. They will go through and find the continuity issues with you, and, like, make style sheets. And I feel like a lot of times we just talk about our editors, but I would die for my CEs because Lord knows I can't spell and I do not keep track of timelines very well.
Well, it's working well so far.
Yeah, it's all coming together.
We're excited for the rest.
I really appreciate it, especially because every other book I'm writing is so different because it's like a contained story.
Yeah.
And so I'm just like, this, I really was like, I'm going to come out with a bang. And I'm like, oh, God, maybe this was a mistake.
I'm going to shoot my shot the first time.
Yeah. Also, I think we should note that, like, we obviously know who the favorite Black brother is for all of us because we have not brought up the Ezra scene at all.
That's true. Oh, my God. The poor guy is dead. He has a whole part.
He gets his own chapter, and nobody's mentioned it.
Okay, that. I will say I really loved that, though. Like, I loved the closure of it because it made me feel better about, I don't know, Gideon and Ezra
moving on together.
His growth after death was really nice to see.
I love that Gideon's like, you're so, what did he say? You're so,
like practical.
Insightful after death.
He's like, death changes ya. I've been marching with these assholes. He's carrying his little stone and they're all marching like zombies. And
And he's like, leave me here. I thought that it was a nice way to kind of give Calla and Gideon the freedom to not be guilty or sad or anything anymore. Yeah, and then right after they show up at the exact same place they started, and I was like, oh, big circle.
Right. Exactly. Like, I'm so glad you noticed that, because some people I don't think like that, but I was like, but think about it. All that work and all the consequences they gained from it to end up in the exact space that they started, because if they had just realized from the beginning that, like, Calla specifically, that things were not working out with Ezra. Like, that was, like, her and that conversation she had with Hannah. Everyone's like, that was not working. Like, mm-hmm. And I know some people do not like the love triangle brother thing. You can pry it out of my cold, dead hands. I'm so sorry. The angst will always be there for me. I do not care. But I was just like, it's just really, like, her and Ezra were just not good fits. They were very bad for each other. Like, I just don't think they brought out the best parts of each other. Even though he had the reasons he did for, like, betraying her or whatever. Like, that's all valid, but y'all still clash constantly. Yeah. And so that little part where he basically tells her, he's like, I cracked our foundation. Like, we can build atop it. We can put Band-Aids over it, basically. But, mm-hmm. like, it will always be cracked underneath. And we will always know that. But, like, she doesn't, like, she has a solid foundation with Gideon. Like, there's no cracks in it. And he's like, this, like, guilt is a really stupid reason not to be happy and, like, live your life.
I love that line, too.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, yeah, this is how I feel, because I feel like, not that I'm, like, doing anything, like, innovative, but I feel like so often, because we like the bad boy trope in books, we kind of overlook some things that are like, in real life, maybe.
Yeah.
That's not healthy. And hey, I will write those books too, but for this, I really just wanted it to be like, hey, you could have a very healthy thing and still kind of have an edgy love interest, right?
Yeah.
Like,
mm-hmm.
So that was the reason I did
this. I also love that right after, when Calla is telling Hannah everything, Hannah's like, we told you this, like, a long time ago. And she was like, well, yeah, but, you know, I just figured you guys were just being you. Like, you, Delphine was just, you know, being sassier. She's like, we just, we told you all of this. Like, I don't understand why you had to listen to Ezra, but not us. He's like, oh, well.
God, and have we not all had that moment with our
friends?
Yep. Where it's like, we have been telling you that man was trash for so long, and, like, finally you wake up and it's like, thank freaking God.
Yeah. And you're like, actually, don't remember all of the times that you told me that, but I'm sure they did happen. I'm not saying you're a liar. I'm just saying I don't remember it.
It's just like, when you wake up and it's like, oh, I'm kind of embarrassed, but
Yeah. Like, let's never mention this again. He's dead. Like, that's fine.
We're all moving on.
Yeah. We're starting over. Let's go do what we need to do.
And I knew, it's so funny too, because I was like, I know some people are going to be really sad. And I genuinely apologize for that, because I know, like, choosing someone in a love triangle, like, can be kind of heartbreaking. But when people are like, why did she do all this just for Ezra to stay? Or, like, whatever happens in the future. It's really just because it's like, I feel like sometimes we just cannot get exactly what we want, exactly how we want it. And I feel like sometimes we just have to waste some time on it. And learn our lessons.
Yeah.
And move on.
That is life, everyone. You know, all the youth listening, reading these books.
Caspian was right, but they needed to learn that Caspian was right.
Right. Exactly. Sometimes you gotta do it yourself.
Yep. Okay, there's our moment for Ezra. R.I.P. R.I.P. Ezra.
The emo king.
Yes, Ezra fans, we see you, we hear you, but he's gone. So let's move along to the queens and all of their freaking truth bombs at the end of this freaking book, where I'm like, what's going on? Calla's mom apparently ran away from the queen and went to go marry somebody. I was like, what? When did we...
I wanted to ask about that.
Did Calla know about this the whole time? Is she just, like, living her life, no having this information? Like, what?
So Calla was not really privy to it. There was definitely always, like, a spotlight on her with Miria. Like, why are you taking so much time to pay attention to, like, one witch? Like, there are a lot of witches in her situation that might roll double numbers and stuff. And it's fully out of spite, because Calla was the daughter that Miria was supposed to have with Indra, right? And that
Indra left. Indra ditched her and went with Agnes.
For good reasons.
yeah, why? Okay. She seems so upstanding.
She doesn't like Miria? What? Who would have thought?
I know, I'm like, Indra, babe, what a hot thing to do. Leave a queen.
I know.
Yeah, and so, like, she knows a little bit of her family lore, but obviously some things happened as far as, like, death goes with the mother who birthed her specifically, and so there are, like, always been missing pieces, and she was raised by these sort of guardians who in her coven who were nice enough to take her in, but then she started rolling these roles, and we kind of get to see in that scene where she has the visions of mm-hmm. every role she's made previous, which was really fun to write. That people started getting scared of her. Like, they were already kind of weary of her because she was a siphon, but they were like, okay, you're one of our own, you're in a coven. And that was really just to show, like, I mean, when you allow people around you to, like, treat something that I guess you're, like, the minority of and be like, you're the exception for us, it's like, you are the first person they will eat. And I've seen that so much. And I mean, being queer, you know exactly, if you know, you know, like, that exact metaphor. Like, when we turn on people we should really be have solidarity with, it's like for people who absolutely don't care about us.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of my goal there, like, to my own experiences and stuff. And she only had, like, a limited knowledge of her mother's and her mother's history, and I think it finally clicked into place, like, oh, this is why you have such an, this is why more than anything you do not want me around, like,
yeah, because you hate my guts, because my mom left you.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. And it's like, she's the spinning image of her mom too. Like, her mom, the only difference is her mom has, like, two lavender eyes, which will kind of will, like, eventually,
yeah,
she'll you know, in book three and stuff, it's like, yeah, they look exactly like each other, which I love. And
she kind of references that. Miria says, like, oh yeah, you look like Indra, but you act like Agnes. Yeah.
Yep. Man.
We also, okay, so I was confused because Miria makes a comment and she says, I always told your mom, your mother, like, you're lucky that I didn't go after your daughter. I went after, like, I forget what she says, like, the witch who you ran away with. But then Calla says that her birth mom was the one that was killed or died or whatever, and that she had 6 years with Agnes. So I was like, I'm confused, like, do we learn exactly what Miria did to her moms, or, like, is it just kind of like,
we will learn that. It's okay, because there's, like, a there's kind of like a surrogacy situation.
We also were gonna, I was gonna ask about that. Yeah. Like how do they have Inception. Is it like all, is it all Rouge witches have children that way, or was it only just because like they were together as a gay couple and they were like, we want to have a kid, and then that's how it happened, and Gideon and Ezra have like a dad, or do they also have two moms? Like, matter, is it important? Didn't seem like it was like that big of a deal.
It wasn't super important, and I mean, like, we'll kind of get those details a little more later, like clarifying, because it's like part of the reason that Khaled didn't really know what was going on, right? Because we'll know what happened to Indra specifically, but like the reason Khaled's like, of course it's not my fault, because I feel like some people were like, Khaled was kind of like, I thought she might be sad when the witch eater in book one basically reveals that she killed her mom, and Khaled's like immediately doesn't really feel, she's like, of course it wasn't my fault, like I was a baby. She's talking about her, like, her birth mother, right? Like, the surrogate. And that's, it's genuinely because they were a gay couple, and both of them, like, I have, like, a cute little thing in my head. It was like, well, I want to be pregnant. Like, they both wanted to, like, experience that, but they were like, we're going to compromise. We're just going to, do it. And so that's kind of the situation. And we'll learn details. It's like, it was never supposed to be something focused on, but I know... There's a lot. I'll tell you all the full story of what happened with those specific lines later. But yeah, I know now, like, I wish I had gotten a chance to add like a little clarification in there, because I do know that's probably like a very sticky part. But yeah, it was just because they used surrogate, they were gay, and then something happened to Indra. And then obviously, like, she got her first 6 years with Agnes.
Yep. Yeah. It was more sticky, though. I think, at least for me, it was, like you said, like, it sticks in your brain, because I think it would have been cool to have a kind of, like, situation where the Covens are, like, you know, kind of like Amazons, where we're like, we don't want the men. Like, you guys have to stay out. Yeah. Like, you know, no. You can be here, but, like, we don't like you. Like, that kind of situation. I was like, maybe this is a thing, because that would be kind of cool. Like,
yeah. No, Gideon and Ezra have a dad. Like, it's not, unfortunately, it's not like that. It's not anything as cool as that. But, yeah, it was just because they were, like, gay. And
yeah. Like, yeah. Aww. Like, we love each other. We want a baby. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is also nice. It's also a good story. But I was like, well, they're witches, and it would be cool to be, like, the men Rouge witches have to, like, suffer in exile, and they, like, all stay here, and then we bring them out when we need them for something, but then they go back to work, and they go do something else. Like, I don't know.
That is so, like, funny.
I was like, maybe that's the thing here.
I mean, it is a matriarch, right? Like, yeah. Technically, Gideon's the heir, but he can't rule, like, even, you know, even if something happened to his mom. So, yeah, I mean, I guess I could add maybe I'll do something like that in one of the other continents.
There you go.
Yes.
Society of Sapphics and living in peace and harmony.
Yes.
I love it.
Yes. I'm sure that most of the listeners are also man haters like us. Like, mm-hmm. we're man haters. We love you, but also, like, get it together, guys.
Yep.
anyway,
end of episode.
We'll stop.
We're done. We've done today's work. That's it. Goodbye. I don't think I have anything else. Like, literally, just everyone. Here's a clip if we need it. Oh, everyone, yeah. Read. Also, confirm or clarify the series name. What is it? Heartless Fates?
It is Heartless Fate.
Okay.
Y'all, I cannot even get into it. It is different on every website. And
oh, no.
It's like Witch's Dice in some place. It's Heartless Fates is the series name.
Okay.
What happened was, the book was originally called Witch's Dice. And, like, you know, 85% of books, once they're sold, their titles get changed. I think that's, like, or it might even be a higher number than that. Like, it's very common your title gets changed by marketing. And I think what happened was, because it was that old one, they did, like, okay, the new name is Ruinous Fate, in parentheses, Witch's Dice, like, what it used to be called. And then Witch's Dice is a prevalent term in the book. And so I think people just got a little confused, and that's what happened. But
chaos.
The official series name is Heartless Fates. Yeah, it was just full chaos.
Yes,
yeah.
You heard it here first. Heartless Fates series. Go pick it up if you haven't. They are amazing. They're fun. You get a whole crew of characters. You get multiple POVs.
The best crew.
Yeah, they're so fun. All of their antics. You get a sentient forest. You get witches and magic and fates and gods and plot twists. And you will feel all of the emotions. So before we end, is there anything you can share news for our listeners? It doesn't have to be about the series. It can be about anything that you're working on, something that you want everyone to be looking out for. And then we'll wrap things up after that.
Yeah. So obviously, hopefully we'll look forward to book three. Hope I'll have more information about that in 2024. We'll see what happens. But as far as other things I'm working on, I have a book coming out in September. It is my very first adult romance book. It's very...
Woo! Yay! Yes.
I've actually let Dev and Loretta read a very early version of it. We are...
Yes, it's already amazing. I can tell you.
I'm so excited.
I'm actually wrapping up final edits for it first week of January. So, like, it's about to be in its final iteration. I just got a cover in my inbox.
Yay!
And it's gorgeous. And I love A Ruinous Fate and A Reckless Oath and this series so much. But I am so excited.
I am also excited.
I'm excited. I know.
To finally get to talk about this book. Because I love smut. I mean, let's...
I love smut.
And so, yeah, I was just like,
it's so good, y'all.
It's a gothic horror-esque romance. It has like horror elements in it. It has a game element in it. It has a love interest that is basically Danny Phantom for my 13-year-old self who was in love with him.
Yes.
And yeah, so that will probably be revealed very soon after this comes out and stuff, and I'm really excited.
Yay!
To talk about it.
I am also excited. Like Kay said, Loretta and I have read the early version, and I think I finished it in like 2-3 days. I finished it really quickly. It was amazing. It was so good.
I did too.
So everyone, look for news, and I'm sure we'll have another episode where we go through all of the horror romance smut of this book. So stay tuned for
more. I can't wait.
I was gonna say, that one is gonna be fun.
So much fun. And there are sassy, fun characters in that, and there's romance and kissing and more. So, and
more than kissing and blood.
Blood,
yeah.
Scary things.
I think it's gotten bloodier in edits, which is so funny.
I love that. I love that news.
Every time I turn it in, my editor's like, okay. We added blood, I see.
The comment's like, was this blood necessary?
Always, yes. Always.
Literally. me just Xing everything was like, is this totally necessary? Yes, yes, yes.
Well, thanks for sharing that with us. We hope you all had a fun time listening in on all of our antics over our new favorite YA series, fantasy series. Thanks for joining us, Kaylee.
Yes, thank you.
We hope everyone loves this series. We will leave playlists, links to the books, and all of that good stuff in the description for later if you need it. And we hope your day is filled with main character energy, as always.
Main character energy!
All right. See y'all next time.
Bye!